This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
I loved it. You know, it's always nice, you know, when the fans, you know, are calling your name, but it's, you know, it's not about me, it's about the team. And I just come on, you know, and try to create. And obviously, you know, I come on and played a part in the first goal and then got the assist for the second. So, you know, I think it was, you know, a good performance for myself. Even at the start, you know, I come on and I was slipping all over the place, actually. It was an unbelievable feeling to come here today, you know, and have the fans singing my name. You know, I've said to you before that It's weird because I usually have these fans booing me, but you know, when they're cheering me like this and singing my song, you know, there's nothing more than I want to do than pay them back with goals and assists. So hopefully my goal will come soon.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast. I'm David Michael, the editor of myoldmansaid.com. Joining me for a mid-Euros chat and update, what's been happening in both the Euros and Aston Villa, Mr. Chris Budd and Mr. Phil Shaw. Welcome.
Hello, mate. How was your trip to Budapest with the Dutch?
Let's see, we like to get into the Euros.
Physically.
Excellent. It was a pitch-perfect trip. It was like the Roaring Twenties in Budapest. Once they've checked that you've been tested and vaccinated in clubs and everything, it's you know, no mention of face masks or anything like that, no social distancing. It's just full-on partying. And then with the Dutch, you get the old Orange Army march with tens of thousands of Dutch fans, which was it was almost emotional at times, just serenading families on their balconies as you walk through town with bands and everything. I mean, really good natured, really
and
good fun.
And not a hint of 10 German bombers in sight, I'd imagine.
Well, not a hint of any people being arseholes, basically.
Oh, good.
Or small-minded
you turned
arseholes.
Up, everyone else turned up, but the team didn't.
Yeah.
perfect day. The only thing missing was 90 minutes from the Dutch.
And they were awful.
That's probably a team thinking that they're already in the semi-final when they saw the draw. And that's it's a tale for England to heed as well. It's a cautionary tale that you really do need in tournaments to take. As we've seen in a lot of these games, there's been a few shocks.
Some big ones.
Where are all the group of death boys? They're all out, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
France, Portugal, Germany.
Blown the draw wide open.
I would ask you about your cricket experience tonight, but it seems like it was over before it began.
It's probably the most one-sided game of cricket. And everyone, great that the Bears won, but bloody hell. I think they bowled Yorkshire out for 81 in about 15, 16 overs and then knocked them off in 8.
For listeners who live overseas and don't understand the rules of cricket, Birmingham Bears, the local Birmingham team, actually play around the corner from where I live. And it's like a one-day thing. We don't need to go into the details. Bears are normally pretty good. Yorkshire, it's meant to be God's country, isn't it? But obviously
God's own, yeah, apparently.
They're not producing. Yorkshire is where Leeds come from, shall we say. So Birmingham absolutely destroyed them tonight. Right, let's get into this podcast. But first of all, just a quick shout out for sponsor, supporter of this episode, Free Trade, who we introduced at more length in the last episode. It's an investment app where you can buy shares and look after your portfolio in a very, very, very accessible manner and is commission free. A lot of share apps are quite complicated and you have to pay, you know, anywhere around £10-12 for an actual transaction to buy shares, but this is all without commissions. And well, I use it. That's why we have it supporting the show, essentially. I wanted to steer away from the old betting companies and the typical type of sponsors that football podcasts attract, and wanted to really get sponsors that A, I use, and B, actually can help listeners and actually give them something and enlighten them as well, because one good thing about getting into shares, you start to really start to research companies, etc. And it's, you know, it's more for long-term wealth. So rather than trying to get people to bet to lose all their money, let's take the stance of trying to get people to earn money for the long term. But so far, so good. A good reaction from the listeners so far who have signed up, because you do get a free share when you do sign up anywhere between £3 and £200. Remember, as with all investments, your capital is at risk. The value of your portfolio can go down as well as up, and you may get back less than what you invest. But luckily, if you are a My Old Man Said patron, I mentioned it in the last podcast about potentially setting up some kind of Investo Club. Well, Investo Club now exists. So if you're a patron, just go to Match Club and check it out. We've actually got a few financial advisors in there and traders who are willing to, we're not giving financial advice, but we will certainly impart knowledge and tips, etc. So hopefully it'll evolve into something quite interesting. But go to freetrade.io/moms, M-O-M-S, and sign up. And as soon as you fund your account, you get your free share, which arrives within a week or so. Right. Thank you very much to those guys again. And now let's start with a little Villa news. The fan consultation group meeting with Christian Perslow took place. I don't know if I want to go into details about stadium developments now, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, basically go to the My Old Man Said website if you haven't read it already. The full notes are there. The headline, I would say, in terms of stadium expansion, which a lot of people like to talk about, is the last time we were speaking with Christian Perslow about it, he just dismissed it, kicked it into the long grass. But now he's talking time frames, and it's very much a live wire concern. So we're moving, people. And I think next season, the idea of this meeting was to, you know, get out. What is our ambition? And it's, you know, 100%, as I've always known, but for a lot of fans out there don't seem to realize the hardline ambition of European football. And we're not just talking Europa League, you know, we're talking aiming at the top four. So that is the underlining ambition. And that's what we start, what should be a bit of a firecracker of a season, I would say, next season.
I'd hope so. Really, yeah, hope
for
so.
For sure. Right. Meanwhile, Copa America, while Mr. Mings and Grealish help the England cause, Martinez and Luiz, Douglas Luiz, are in the quarterfinals of the Copa America. I think Douglas Luiz started his first game. Was it against Ecuador?
Yeah,
he sat on the bench for the first couple of games, didn't he?
And Martinez is having a nice tournament so far as well.
He's a more interesting one, because for years Argentina haven't had a decent keeper to go with all their other talent, and now people are starting to say, is he the missing link in the puzzle?
Just as Messi's on his way out, though, unfortunately for them.
Yeah, that's bad timing. But they do have this chap called Buendia.
Ah, yes, so they do.
Apparently he will be a legend, and he will take the crown off Messi and win, as well as a World Cup for Argentina, he'll win a league title for Aston Villa.
He'll win everything.
So the prophecy is told. Meanwhile, finally, Dalian Atkinson's family have a verdict. PC Benjamin Monk was sentenced to 8 years with a requirement to serve 2/3 of it before being eligible for release. I think everybody knows the full story there, but it's actually the first time in over 30 years that a British police officer has been convicted of manslaughter in the course of their duties. I mean, it's a significant case that's hardly got any traction in the media. When you consider, I think if there was video footage of it, you'd have
a bit more outcry for sure.
Compared to, you know, obviously what happened with the Black Lives Matter movement and how that became an international thing. And this, arguably, is a worse occurrence because it's tasering for way over the limit. And then a couple of kicks in the head as well.
Yeah.
It's pretty full on. And it's just been, it's like, and in other news, that's where it's kind of ended up.
Yeah, it feels like it's been given lip service, whether it's because of the Euros. But even when it, you know, when the first story broke, it...
I'm talking from day dot when it happened onwards.
That's what I was saying. Like from the time the story broke, there hasn't been that kind of outrage, especially really, with all due respect, from the Villa fans.
No, it's pretty strange, actually. But at least the family, more importantly, have got some justice. I mean, you know, it hasn't come quick. Meanwhile, the jury was unable to reach a verdict on PC Betley Smith. And I think at this time of recording, it's still unclear what's going to be happening with that, with her, in terms of retrialing, etc. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, a big rumour hit the ground about Grealish being done deal to Manchester City.
Until we saw who the journalist was at the Daily Mail, and it looked like it was one of the interns or something that had broken the story.
It was like, done deal, blah, blah, blah. Then you got TalkSport and everybody starts to piggyback. And then you're starting to think, well, you know, I didn't think anything. Just thought, yeah, more bollocks. Of course, you know, Villa Twitter artists just jump all over it as if it's happening. It's a real thing without really any investigation, as per usual. This is, you know, how the clickbait things start. We've had many circumstances like this. How many times has Grealish been sold? He's already been sold to Spurs, Manchester United. People don't learn, though, from how the media works. They haven't worked out the equation yet. It's almost like it's goldfish memories, isn't it? It's like, we start again. Didn't you learn anything from when he was attached to Spurs? Didn't you learn anything when, especially the Manchester United one? Apparently not. Then I could tell by some of the news coming out, some of the tweets by certain journalists that they'd spoken to the club, so I spoke to the club to get the lowdown, and there is a life threat of Manchester City actually preparing a bid, because that's what the club have obviously got wind of. But the club have not received any approach from Manchester City at that time when I spoke to the club. But obviously they've acted because they knew that City had a green light interest in this. So I'm sure Mr. Grealish will become even richer on the Villa contract. I mean, I weigh this up in my head all the time. You know, as soon as he leaves Villa, I think the football side of things drops, because he's not going to be earning. If he wins anything with Villa, it's going to be earned. He will have to do well to lift Villa to that level, or help lift Villa to that level. If he goes to Manchester City, he could probably sleepwalk his way to a league title medal, and maybe more. Just because it's easy street. And I think this is a unique challenge, where you are a childhood supporter of a club that suddenly, you know, then you become a season ticket holder, then you become start playing for the team, then you become the captain of it, and then suddenly you've got owners who actually want to compete in the Champions League, and they've got serious money. They're the third richest owners in the Premier League, and it's like, this is a perfect storm. I think you go with that. You take it another season at least before you just sell your soul and go, yeah, give me some medals.
I agree.
Yeah.
I just, you know, I mean, we said it all through last season, even when he signed the contract at the beginning of the season. It was like, you'll see where we're at in a year's time, just in terms of where the expectation of the club and his expectation was. They knew, you know, they're on track, and he is on track for where they want it to be. They probably would have liked to have been more. That's kind of what, you know, Perslow alluded to in the FCG, that they were disappointed not to get into the Europa League, but whatever. But in terms of if at the end of next season, Dave, you know, if come at this time next year, Villa haven't hit the target they want, then I'm sure he probably won't be there. But in a year's time is in a year's time, and we'll come to that bridge.
Villa actually did started to believe, right, Europe's on. That was the thinking behind the scenes. This is, I'm talking about, you know, up to like Christmas time.
Well, they kind of publicly came out and said it in a loose way.
And, you know, of course you got injuries, and at this time in our squad building, we don't have that kind of depth in terms of quality to, have a couple of key players out. We can't carry that, and that's what cost us. And it's almost like, well, if we got lucky with those, you know, Barkley and Grealish, then we would have had no excuses there. And, you know, we would have done well, because that Barkley buy, you know, that Barkley loan move was to fast track us. And, you know, it was a gamble, but it was started off well and unfortunately fizzled out, which is a bit of an understatement. But yeah, you know, Villa put out a tweet today in terms of the last few hours to renew your season ticket. And there's a picture of seats with the big Super Jack banner over the top of it. If he suddenly goes and they've been trying to sell season tickets on the back of Jack Grealish playing, then they're soon going to see that backfire a bit.
Yes.
And their waiting list of 13,000 will start to dwindle. And, you know, you'll have commercial knock-on effects big time. So they're not going to let him go without one hell of a big fight. And, you know, what's the excuse? Oh, you need to be playing for one of the big three to get into the England team. Well, no, you don't actually. And he's proved that. So he can be the England man. And he's, you know, he's on a different level now in terms of exposure. This is what these big national tournaments do. People who don't watch football day in, day out are suddenly watching when England are in the World Cup or European Championships. And so as a result, a player becomes a household name.
Yeah, and he is everywhere. He's on every channel, every news broadcast about the in-game. I mean, I can't remember a Villa player getting that sort of exposure with the team. And you think,
yeah, I mean, it's all down. I mean, there's one basic thing in life. It's like if you're good looking, you've got a more chance than, you know, the average schmo. You don't actually have to work to earn a shitload of money.
He's clearly got a brilliant agent.
And so that he carries that advantage. And he's now the agency he's with the end of last year was bought out by a like a Hollywood talent agency, and know quite a lot about diversifying the brand and, you know, getting, let's say, actors to do different types of advertising and move them into different sectors. And they do that with their sports stars as well in America. So you could say that there's two things that, as an agent who doesn't really know anything about fucking Villa or whatever, you're thinking, as long as he doesn't take a penalty in this European Championship, because all the progress and the you know, the rise in his stock would suddenly nosedive, and, you know, he'd have to be doing pizza adverts to make a living. Or he signed to a Champions League club, so he instantly, you know, gets to capitalize on that, on his persona, because Champions League is a big international export as well. But on the flip side, you can tell the story more. I think with him staying with his club, his childhood club, there's a stronger story there for branding, and he suddenly becomes the symbol of trust, if that makes sense. So if you've
loyalty.
So if that is the basis of your product and your brand, you know, for Grealish to be the face of something, this is something if a savvy agent won't necessarily be pushing him towards Manchester City. They'll see the bigger picture. So anyway, we'll see how this one pans out. Good news is England stay in the tournament. Grealish stays a Villa player 100% while they're still in the tournament. So just keep on winning, England. Meanwhile, Sancho, apparently at the time of this podcast, has understood United have agreed terms with Dortmund.
Good move for both, I would say.
And you're talking at 73 million, which is lower than, which was muted probably last year. You know, we're looking at Sancho in English eyes as somebody who's not making the pitch in the Euros so far. He's only played a few minutes, hasn't he?
Yeah, I think he played, was it the last 10 minutes, 5 or 10 minutes of the Czech game? That was about it.
Yeah. So if Grealish is actually, he's already an impact player for England in this tournament. As, you know, as we said, this isn't the first 11 is not as important as a first 11 used to be. This is about the match day squad and the utilization of that. And we'll get into it in a second. So his value is, we know, at least over 73 million. Anyway, 3 points. Let's get into them. Quick and snappy. Point number one, well, it's a double header. It's all about... Point number one, it's a double header. Suddenly, traditionally, our teams in our ballpark, Everton and Spurs, have within hours before recording this show, acquired new managers. Managers with caliber, a bizarre one, I think. Rafa Benitez going to Everton. Didn't look right. I had to blink twice.
Yeah,
to,
it's a strange one. I mean, it's a good move for them, but it is a weird one.
The natives are restless, yeah.
And Nuno going to Spurs, which seemed like a season ago, would be like a logical transition, because you were waiting for him. If he couldn't get Wolves up to that level, in, you know, quarter-finalists Europa League, they're kind of on their way. I think they just bit off two. I think they got they qualified for that a bit early, too early. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they hit a glass ceiling and kind of bounced off it. And now Nuno to Spurs, it kind of feels like he's the fourth or the fifth choice.
But also, Wolves got rid of him, didn't they?
Yeah. I mean, they said it was mutual, but they were the owners essentially went, well, should we part ways? And he was like, yeah, right.
Yeah, and then he was attached to clubs like Crystal Palace or whatever, and you just thought, that seems like, oh, he was booted and now he's just scratching around for a job. But he's managed to end up at a place where probably a year ago you would have expected him to go. It's almost like it was a natural evolution of his career. But there's still question marks about him, and there's also question marks about Spurs' situation at this moment.
Yeah, big transitional period for Spurs. And Arsenal, yeah. To be fair, the two North London clubs in a really interesting position.
I think out of those two situations, I think probably Rafa's got the easier wicket because
he
can just literally, if he can keep the players that Angelotti got in, he can kind of, you know, pick up where they were left off.
Yeah.
Point number two, Northern Ireland Football League is set to provide defibrillators for all 41 member clubs. It's obviously inspired by Denmark's Christian Eriksen and his situation in the Euros. So it's good that people take note of these things to actually make sure they don't happen. I mean, you know, Irish Premiership teams do have them, as I'm sure a lot of football clubs have, but lower down the levels, and, you know, Women's Premiership as well. The idea that they have this equipment on hand and they're learning, I mean, even if it just saves one life across, you know, 10 years or whatever, it's still worth doing. So
I think it's very much filling in the gaps there, because a good lot of teams and facilities that they play at would have one. But, you know, if it raises awareness that people know to go and look for it and they know that there's going to be one there, it's all good.
Point number three, Haitian scandal. I think we unearthed a Brazilian one last time. This is the Haitian Football Federation. Rosnick Grant, a former international referee and now suspended vice president and head of referees at the Haitian Football Federation, has denied claims of attempting to arrange the killing of a radio journalist who had been attempted to uncover corruption and sexual abuse in the Haitian Football Federation, namely by Mr. Grant himself. Last year, there was a Guardian investigation where trainee referees, female ones, were saying, if you want to have a career, as one of them said, quoting to the Guardian, the end of your career potentially could end before it started if you did not have sex with Mr. Grant. If you want to have a, one of them said, if you want to have a career to referee tournaments, the only person who can make that happen is Grant. He uses it as a leverage to be selected. We have some tests, physical, for example. Some girls pass the test, but they're not selected. We have some girls who didn't go to the physical test, but are still selected because they sleep with Grant. It's very simple. They take the alternate physical test, it seems. Anyway, he's said to have arranged a meeting with three local gangsters to have this journalist popped off, but they refused. And allegedly he said to them, if you don't want to do it, I'll find somebody else to do it.
It's a bit of a stark contrast to the head of the PGMOL, isn't it?
Well, that's why, you know, I tried to smoke the peace pipe with them and have discourse through the FSA rather than just bitching on Twitter, because you never know. A little red dot might appear on my forehead.
Might have to call the boys.
While I'm recording this podcast, a little red dot might appear on my forehead, and
somebody says the word, and like the assassin Mike Dean gets triggered or something. That's just his trigger word, and he's
sleep,
after
it's
you.
It's a sleeper cell. It's the mom's sleeper cell.
So yeah, in this case, this is just somebody who thinks is powerful, and he's in a bit of a tight spot there because he's about to lose all his power. Right, before we go on, I just want to say a big thank you to the My Old Man Said patrons for supporting the show and most of all interacting and joining our community of Match Club as well, having access to Match Club. You also get access to the Mom's Patreon podcast channel as well, and within Match Club there's other clubs in there now. There's Screen Club, which is like a screen culture club, because, you know, my background's from the film world, so that's the point, actually, Mr. Phil. We have to record another podcast related to that. At the moment, the working title's My Old Mandalorian Said on those podcasts, but I think if we got a catchier title that they would be more frequent.
Yeah, well, you don't need to worry about spoilers, do you? Because I took a quick glance in there today, and it looked like a CIA redacted papers. It was just black bars everywhere. I went, oh, right, something's going on.
People are very conscientious in Match Club because in the channel for talking about you know what you're watching, you know whether it's low key or whatever TV stuff you're watching as well as films. But when people are talking about spoilers, they do. Blank them out. So if you want to see what they've written, you just click on the black bars and it appears. So it's a great feature, I think, actually. Works very well. I didn't even know about it, to be honest. But also, there's Investo Club now. That's why we have free trade supporting the show. And once we started talking about it to listeners, then it soon became apparent that this is something that we have a bit of a hive mind on with various people who are...
Yeah, we've got some very bright people.
Actually, traders as well and financial advisors. So we're hive-minding it. This is the direction for the new season because Villa hopefully will be rocking and rolling and we will too. But big special thanks to the new patrons that signed up in the last week. Stuart Cowley, David Southam, Leo Hetman, Colin Spence and Adam Yanoka, who actually signed up literally hours, well, minutes actually, before we started recording this podcast. So a big thanks to them. Anybody else who wants to join us and also support the show, go to the My Old Man Said website, myoldmansaid.com, and check out the Patreon option on the menu. I think I'll be revamping that. So new people might have something fresher to look at in terms of detailing the evolvement of things like Match Club.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Etc. Right, let's talk Euros, lads.
England press regardless with Shaw. And now Grealish. Grealish in! In comes the captain! 2-0 England! Harry Kane's championship has begun!
Straight into the England game.
Yeah, let's talk about everyone else first.
Really?
Nah.
Although I could talk about the Dutch before the game all day long.
Now, that's a show in itself. Save that.
Yeah. Right. Going into this game, one thing I thought, the good thing about England was that they were solid in terms of they hadn't conceded a goal. But I think Southgate didn't think they were solid enough, so he went to the solid formation of three centre-backs. I think I put up a tweet as soon as I saw the formation or the personnel. I just said, this will not be a 3-3 going into extra time as the previous two games the night before had. So we're expecting a kind of a cagier affair, as those first three games had suggested. I think Southgate, it's all about winning, and people have an issue with this. And the funny thing is, you just look at our demeanour. You know, in my time my time on this planet, England have been the plucky losers, and we haven't won. And but as long as we go down fighting, that seems to be enough. Here's a guy, it decides, right, let's win. Let's forget about this gallant losing, you know.
nonsense, frankly.
Throwing caution to the wind, blah, blah, blah. They've been analysing what kind of teams win tournaments and how do they play. And this is what we've got here. Now, if you've got a problem with that, and people have, and they whinge and moan, and just, you know, look at some of the shit I, you know, read out. Okay. You obviously don't know much about tournament football, or B, you've forgotten about tournament football and how things normally transpire, and the teams, how their journey goes through the groups, and, you know, what the telltale signs are that this certain team might actually do well, etc., etc. But anyway, so Walker came in to join it with Staines and Maguire, and Trippier and Shaw were the chosen fullbacks. You look at this team and you think, these players are pretty flexible, aren't they? Like, Walker's played in two positions there, Trippier's played in two positions. I'm talking about the rear guard, because we talked earlier on, I think it was in the second show, that maybe you want to bed down your back four, or, you know, bed down your back line.
I think so.
But these players seem to be okay to switch positions and change formations, and maybe it's a bit more advanced than we're giving it credit for.
Well, we've played both systems before.
Yeah.
To be fair to Southgate, he has two preferred systems and personnel to put into them. I think the back three and wing backs kind of works against a team like Germany, who are going to have a bit of the ball and they're going to come at you. You know, the Ukraine game next, you might see him revert to how he played before. I think there will be changes in personnel and system potentially, but for this game, I think he got it. You know, he set up his plan and he for the most part got it right. I think the first 10-20 minutes, maybe, I think I was a bit concerned with.
Are you missing something? You can't jump into the game without talking about no Grealish.
I just did.
You know what I mean, though. That's the burning thing on everybody's. It's like, oh no, there's no Grealish. You know, no Grealish. I'm not surprised by that, because I thought Saka did really well. And again, I think he was thinking any team, Germany, the way to get at them is to give them a threat of pace against them. So I wasn't surprised, because Saka did really well in the last game.
I didn't know if Sancho might get a look in, although he hasn't featured yet. I didn't know if there was an argument to be made for him maybe coming in just because he knows that opposition. But the way Saka performed, you know, in the Czech game, he did well. The first 60 minutes against Germany, I thought he did pretty well. I think he gave his legs. He was lively again.
Yeah.
He did well.
Yeah. So I expected to see Grealish 100%. I mean, there's people are going, you know, oh well, he's not going to get on. You know, this is before the game even kicked off. He's not going to get on because he'll bring on Foden, he'll bring on Matt. They clearly have no idea what Southgate's about, because Southgate is very much a Grealish fan. He was almost like at his hospital bed when he was out for 3 months, making sure he was fit. I mean, he was at Villa Park every game he was back.
I mean, how many times did he sit beside Jack in all those hideous tracksuits and just...
Exactly, you know, yeah. He had to sit next to all those hideous tracksuits when Grealish was out. So he wants to utilise him, and he seems to know, you know, how to do that. But, you know, we'll get more about this in a second. Examples of, you know, some of the most... Jeff Hurst didn't play a single group game, and he's like known as the man who won England the World Cup. And when he was selected for that game, you know, Alf Ramsey was getting pelters because people were saying Jimmy Greaves should be playing because he was scoring shitloads of goals. And this is just the way it works. Bobby Robson used to get a battering in the tabloids, and then he was suddenly Sir Bobby just because he got him into a semi. Some of the flack that's gone Southgate's way, when he's actually, if you take a step back strategically, you know, you've got to take off your claret and blue glasses. And by the way, Grealish is... his big role is still to play, I think. If England win the Cup, one of those reasons why they'll win the Cup is because of Grealish's contribution. So as the game panned out, it was reasonably cagey. And I think my only concern was just those yellow cards that Rice and Phillips picked up.
Yeah, it's kind of, as I was saying, I thought the first 20 minutes or so, those you saw the little golfing class in terms of Rice and Phillips. I'd class them as good Premier League players, but in Toni Kroos and players like that, they're what you call world-class players, and they're experienced and savvy, and they were running on top of them a lot. I don't know if it's because they're either outnumbered or they were just out positional play and they didn't quite know which one to go, or they didn't hold their positions, or whether they just hadn't grown into the game yet. But when they did grow into the game, They were both excellent. I thought Rice had a fantastic game.
Yeah, I thought both
really
of them
good
were great.
Game. Like, he's one of those players actually of opposition teams who's really grown on me through the season. I really
as,
like
as you player. Said, you know, you look at you know the lineup in midfield of the Germans, and you're talking, you know, Real Madrid, Bayern Munich players
who've won things, won World Cups, won Champions League, etc.
And you're thinking, why did Chelsea win the Champions League? I thought they were like middling around fourth position, and then you see, oh, they actually had three Germans in the team.
Yeah,
three of their starting 11, and it's like, ah, shit, I didn't, you know, the penny didn't, I knew they had one at least, but the penny kind of dropped. So this is, I was waiting for some people to say, oh yeah, but this isn't a great German team. But actually, when you look at that first 11, the clubs they play for, it's not that bad.
Yeah.
I mean, the German bar's set high, isn't it? This isn't vintage German, but it's not, that doesn't mean they're a bad side. They're just not quite at the level they were.
No, and maybe when you watch back in a few weeks' time, depending on how the tournament goes, if you watch this game back, you might actually think to yourself, you know, this game was, you know, wasn't an English demolition of the Germans. It was a very even game.
Yeah, and also this is a German team that just wiped the floor with Portugal as well. So that was probably one of the most impressive performances of these Euros so far, that game.
Yeah, my overall takeaway from it, in terms of like a bit of a headline, is Germany had big chances, didn't take them. England had big chances and took them. And that was the difference. You know, Müller chance probably is the defining moment in the game. If he scores that, it could be a different game. We go up the other end, get the second. It's almost like what happened the night before, you know, with the Swiss
penalty
game.
The Swiss
missed the penalty. The French go up the other end, and within, what, 2 minutes, they're 2-1 ahead.
I just think it's the complete opposite of the Euro 96 game. I mean, you think Gascoigne's going across the net and somehow not putting it in. Well, that was Germany's Gascoigne moment, Müller, there, because I don't think there's anybody in the world that didn't think he was going to score.
I thought it was in when it left his boot. I thought that was the goal.
He sat Pickford down, put him the wrong way, and then just bubbled it past the post.
Yeah, no, he couldn't believe it when he missed that.
I think that's him done. That's career ending.
It's the Müller mentality done.
Yep, it's over. Definitely.
And, you know, question marks before the tournament about Pickford. Maybe he'd lost some of his pizzazz. I thought he was great.
He has been all through the tournament, to be fair.
I thought all the defenders were pretty good. You know, ultimately, it was Sterling's back pass that started that shenanigans off. So the back line, I think, were pretty solid. And Maguire, you kind of want Mings in there, but...
You can see why Maguire's in.
Even though he needs to work on his headroom.
Yeah. The only thing with the back line for me was you saw on the rare occasions that the wing-backs actually got involved, because obviously we matched Germany, didn't we, for shape, because they had wing-backs. When our guys actually pinned them back and got involved, you saw Shaw got involved in a great position, square ball 1-0. So there's a lot to be said for, I don't mind us playing a back three, but those wing-backs, they have to get involved. Otherwise, I think we struggle to connect back to the front.
Well, the thing was, Shaw suddenly started getting involved when Grealish was on, and that was a big, somebody who could actually, hold the ball up, but also have that extra pass that actually gets the wing-back into play.
Yes.
Because the first half, I mean, like Sterling was having these great runs. Yeah, he's running at them, but he was, you know, he's running into three or four of the players and he was just missing somebody alongside him. It's almost like that extra defender has taken away like a number 10, for example, who can get amongst it and would have given Sterling a pass there. I mean, it happened a few times with Kane, had a similar problem where he's kind of running into traffic because there isn't actually an option. There's nobody kind of close. They're a bit, those kind of front three are a bit isolated. But when Grealish came on, then suddenly there's that extra person to kind of pass to. And, you know, he was very smart in everything he did, Jack. And it connects it all up. But also the timing of Jack. I mean, we've seen him being marshalled against the likes of, for 90 minutes, against the likes of Brighton and Burnley. But in international level, if you bring him on against a tiring team, suddenly it's a seismic shift in what they've got to deal with. And that's what gives you the edge.
And it's possibly where the hype thing, it plays into your hands, because you could see the lift it gave the crowd and then conversely the lift it gives the team. And the team feed off that energy, and probably the Germans feed off it a little bit as well, in that, okay, England might get the second wind here. And he did give them that little bit of extra, I don't know what you'd call it, it's that little bit of extra energy, like a little bit of glitter on top that they did need in that final third. Like, you saw it for both goals, just Jack picked the pass. At the right moment, he picked the right pass. And I think you spoke about it in the previous two sort of Euros pods we did, that he will be defined on his little bits of end product. Well, the last two times he's played, you've seen him in moments, just having moments of quality. And in international football, he isn't going to have the same necessarily the impact that he has for Villa, where everything's going to go through him. But when he gets his opportunity, he has to take it, and he has done.
And that second goal, the one that he set up for Harry Kane, I mean, as soon as Jack worked space into the box, I was screaming shoot. And in his interview afterwards, he said to himself, you know, was trying to work it for a shot. And I just
he's
going to
work it onto his left, wasn't he, for his shot?
Yeah. And he goes, I just got this feeling that, you know, the right thing to do was, you know, look across for Harry Kane, and he just put it on a plate for him. So, you know, that's an improvement over what we had been talking about before. Just like football and intelligence, that's the right pass at the right time.
And in a really big moment, you know, at that point at one that it's still a little bit nervy in the game, you could quite easily get that rush of blood to the head. This is my golden moment. But actually, Jack traditionally sort of slows things down and picks a pass. And that's what makes him at the level he's at. In big games, big players have big moments, and he's fair play to him in that moment. That's a big tick next to him.
Jack Grealish touch count. Came on 68 minutes, so that, what's that, 22 minutes of play. How many touches did he have?
15.
Ooh. Phil Shaw?
9.
7.
Oh, wow.
Ooh, which shows you the
efficiency.
The efficiency and impact that he can have. He doesn't need to...
One assist, one pre-assist.
Normally he has 7 touches when he gets the ball on the edge of his own 18 yards and, you know, doesn't do anything. But if you get him in the right areas,
yeah,
and Southgate's given him instructions to not, you know, fanny around on the halfway line, whatever, it's like you're going on with purpose rather than, oh, you're playing today, you know, have a good time.
Yeah.
I think it almost helps focus him, because I think you said in a previous interview as well, when he's coming on, it's quite simple, really. He's coming on to either create an assist or score a goal.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, we said that, didn't we, right at the start of the tournament, that Southgate is going to need to find a way to get the best out of his big players in the key part of the field. You know, in terms of Kane, we'll come on to him in a second, but he's managed to do that with Grealish and Sterling, to be fair, who'd been kind of written off before the tournament, although his goals record speaks for itself. He hasn't probably got the best out of a Foden, a Rashford or a Sancho yet, the wide players. But actually, Jack, he's actually found a role that kind of works for him.
Yeah, because I think Mount, I mean, he's like a potential starter, but maybe not at this moment in time. But I don't see him as like, well, let's bring Mount on. That will change the whole game.
It doesn't change the dynamic of a game, I don't think.
Yeah, no, exactly. Foden, yeah, maybe in, you know, the same vibe as Grealish, but I think there's something a bit more impactful, a bit more calculating with Grealish.
Yeah, I think Foden would have been definitely having a shot at the end there, and then, you said.
Well, especially as he's a left-footed player, he just put his laces through it.
Yeah.
Although City players are taught to always play the extra pass.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not, you know, comparing them or, you know, saying one's better than the other. I'm just at this time, it just feels, even if he doesn't start, you know he's getting on the pitch now, because he does change the dynamic.
And can and probably will change the dynamic as well. It's not, he has the potential to. I mean, you look at the bench and think, well, Rashford could change the game. Sancho could.
In a different way, yeah.
But Jack generally does.
But it's from what I've just said, they just seemed a little bit isolated, and when Sterling suddenly goes on a run and he starts committing players, there's nobody to run into that space that he's just created by committing all these players.
No.
And that was one thing, as soon as Grealish came along, it was like, now we've got that extra body to link things up.
Mm-hmm. What was Kane's touch count, just as a matter of interest?
Kane's touch count was 29, which is
more than you'd think, actually, considering how isolated he got.
Yeah, part of the cause, really, for his role, I would say.
Yeah.
One too many in that first half at the end. He could have took a touch less and put it in.
Yeah, I kept looking at that. Could he hit that first time? I think he'd be stretching for it. He probably didn't feel comfortable.
That's when if he's confident, he probably goes for it there. But
yeah, if he's confident, he's probably on it like a step quicker. Then he's in a better position to hit it first time.
But it's a big relief for him just to get the goal.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of Grealish starting, one of my theories was looking at playing those two DMs, that maybe, I mean, Phillips had a great game the first game he played against Croatia, and I thought, oh, actually he does offer stuff going forward, and he's quite neat with some of his passing. He's, you know, he's quite expansive as well, so maybe he can be more of a like a box-to-box influence and link up. But then in the other games, that wasn't really the role, so I was thinking, well, you might as well put Grealish in the middle and that allows him to link up those, you know, the Sterling and Kane, and actually be that link-up man, because they were kind of isolated at times, running almost solo at the opposition. But I thought Rice and Phillips in this game, I thought Rice did really well. He knows the occasion. He was riling up the crowd as well. He was getting the crowd involved. And you thought, shit, this guy's getting, you know, he's gonna get another yellow, surely. And he almost did. He ran into the back of somebody, didn't he? And his first reaction was to, what, you know, rile up the crowd. And he thought, oh shit, a bit of hot-headedness here. This guy, he's showing a lot of passion. But you know, pass completion rate, 95.4, you know, pretty much flawless.
Yeah, and you look at just back in Southgate, you look at the sort of the cards that he still has to play. I mean, would you rather be France? Would you rather have played all your cards and tried to shoehorn all these, you know, super attacking players?
Well, I mean, to be honest with you, Phil, I wouldn't want to be France because they're out.
That's exactly it. And then
they're off home.
Yeah, they're left to bring on Sissoko in the last few minutes when they're trying to chase the game.
I mean, this is the thing.
I mean, our firepower is a joke, isn't it, when you think about the options
we've got?
Yeah,
I said this a couple of podcasts ago. Southgate has a lot of cards up his sleeve still to play. We've got three games, potentially. And
especially in terms of shape and personnel.
And surprises, because sometimes, I mean, you know, you would venture that international teams have done their research on in the whole squad, but not necessarily. When you're getting deeper into a tournament and you've basically got four days to prepare, you're not going to be able to watch every game that, you know, each of these players have played, and especially if they haven't been featuring that much. I mean, you know, a lot of international fans probably not au fait on Jack Grealish, and they will learn about him through this tournament. But similarly, you know, like Jude Bellingham and Sancho, unless you're watching the Bundesliga, you're not going to be 100% au fait with them. So there is definitely cards up sleeves. So I think we're in a very good spot. I mean, just quickly looking at the other teams that are left in this tournament, I think our next opponent's Ukraine. I think you could create a highlights reel of them playing, and it would look amazing with their outside of the foot passes and some of their finishing. But they scrape through qualifications, you know, as the Czechs finished third as well. Will Ukraine pose a problem? I mean, the good thing about that Swedish-Ukraine game was they were kicking lumps out of each other in the final stages of that game, so that will no doubt help. But I think potentially a more open game than the Swedish.
Yeah, it's a different dynamic for England. I think it really helps the fact that we're travelling to Rome for this one. I think it's good. You know, they've had all the hype of the Germany game, and it might just calm the group down just to travel, focus them in, knowing that they've got to go to Italy and get a result. And it'll be a very neutral atmosphere, because, of course, no England fans are allowed to travel. I'd imagine the same applies for Ukraine as well. So it'll be a very kind of not such a partisan crowd. You won't have the pressure of having to play at Wembley and feel that you have to force the game and potentially the crowd get on your back. I think it might be it's a good time for them to travel.
Yeah, I mean, the crowd on your back thing, I don't buy into that. I think
it's not just on their back, but you know what I mean? It's the pressure that you feel you have to force the issue. Is kind of what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think on the field, definitely an advantage playing at Wembley. But I think you're right in terms of that. You know, it's the lead up, isn't it? It's You're not in the same environment, St George's Park or wherever Spurs is, Gaff. You're actually away, and yeah, you can zone out a bit. I mean, on the pitch, I think it will suit Ukraine more than it would if they were playing us at Wembley, just for that, you know, home advantage. But I think we're good enough to do some damage in terms of beating them. But, you know, not many people expecting them to get past Sweden. I didn't think it would be an easy win for Sweden if they were going to win it. But there's enough trickery. I can see them, you know, going 1-0 up and giving us a nervous evening for sure.
I mean, we played them in the Euros, didn't we, back in 2012, wasn't it, in their own country, I remember. And that was a tricky game. Admittedly, it wasn't obviously a vintage England side by a long shot, but I think it's still a game England would feel they should win, though.
Oh, yeah. You should hammer them. I'm not having that at all. It may as well be a
what
bye.
Does the neutral say?
It's a bye. It's a bye to the next round.
Of course, they have played Northern Ireland recently, have they not?
Yeah, and they took a dodgy referee to scrape a 1-0 home win in Kiev against us.
Us is Northern Ireland, just in case you can't tell by the accent. Yeah, I was, that was my next conversation. I always remember, was it when we hammered Denmark 3-0 in the second round?
That was Japan and Korea.
Yeah, where England were like, they hadn't caught light yet. They'd got through and you were waiting for, you know, the tournament to start for England. Then he just hammered them.
Exploded in the first half, didn't we? We were 3-0 up quite quickly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was a great first half. Although England haven't really exploded in recent tournaments, but that could be a potential one against 5-1 Ukraine.
5-1 against Panama was a pretty good first half, to be fair. But the opposition, to be fair, Panama are probably one of the worst teams we've ever played at a tournament.
Yeah, I mean, if England click, then it could happen. I mean, you looked at the Holland game, I think is a pretty good template. I think Ukraine will set up like that.
Yeah, I think you should play Ramsdale and that's just to try and make it even.
I don't think they'll be as well organised defensively as perhaps Sweden would be, but they will be doing what they did against Holland initially and sitting back and trying to catch us on the counter because they have got some tricky players in terms of technically very good. I think the tougher game would be the semi because I think Czechs are pretty solid. Like if they want to nullify you, but we dealt with them comfortably. I thought Denmark, I would say, are the life threat to stop England getting to the final just because. Yeah. Like Switzerland, they have no fear. They're well drilled and they're good energy and, you know, they'll go for it. And, you know, they just swatted Wales away.
I think without Eriksen, they seem to have this real, like, you know, the fire in their belly and the inspiration to kind of be a really galvanised unit. Because I don't think they've got a lot of stars in their side, but they just seem to be really solid. And belief can take you a long way.
Yeah, I mean, I judge mainly what I'm saying, my kind of bigging up the Danes on not so much the Wales game, but the first half against Belgium, which was pretty similar to the way the Swiss took about the French. It's just like, we don't care who the hell you are, we're going to go for you.
Yeah.
And it's like, those teams potentially are a team of 11 very talented top players that, you know, the French were. And well, these teams, the Swiss and Denmark, are much more teams, and it's like a team effort, and that's what gives them, you know, this is some of the parts type scenario. But what do you think about Belgium? I mean, they must have jumped with joy when France went out because I think they were thinking the only real life threat to them is the French. But they've picked up some injuries and they've looked shaky at the back. And I think Italy will be thinking we're going to take these fuckers out.
I think Belgium probably all three of Italy, England and Belgium probably think this is the best chance we're going to get in recent years.
And, you know, the Italians are used to it.
Traditionally, not in very recent history, but traditionally they're always in and amongst it, aren't they, at the business end of tournaments, historically.
I mean, I don't want to get ahead of ourselves here, but in terms of that side of the draw, if England get through against the Ukraine, Czechs and Denmark, two of them, if I could pick my final opponent to set up the best possible England win, I would go for Italy.
It'd be a great way to do it.
Because you want a showpiece. I mean, these, you know, people are going to the final, some of them, you know, paid €1,000, so
there's just one thing that nobody's mentioned, which is Spain.
Oh shit, I forgot about them.
Because this is the problem. They're so far under the radar because they don't have a decent striker, but Morata scored 2 because he's getting 5-6 gilt-edged chances a match. Spain are creating, and I just think Spain are a bit dangerous if you got them in the final.
I just think if you get them on the wrong day, absolutely. I just think defensively, though, if you hold your shit together against the Spanish, they're going to give you opportunities at the other end.
But they're not getting through Switzerland.
Be an interesting game, that. It's two completely different sides because the Swiss, all of a sudden, are planning. It's the team who won't be scared of them. I mean, Croatia, I haven't been particularly impressed with through the tournament. They had little moments of quality, but they scored 3 against them.
I expected the Croatians to wake up for one last hurrah against Spain, I must admit.
Yeah.
And, you know, they could have won that game, let's be honest.
They gave it a good go.
But I think, you know, we want to throw a cliche out there, the tournament too far, you could probably say that. But peak Croatia, let's say a few years ago, they'd have probably beaten Spain there. So that might be a marker of where Spain are because, you know, who have they played?
I mean, I saw a couple of their group games and they look very, very average.
I mean, they kept the Poles in the tournament with that draw against them. I mean, they took Slovakia apart, but Slovakia were only still in that tournament. I mean, God knows what Poland were doing, getting beaten by them, but they were there for a roasting, and that's what Spain finally, you know, when they finally clicked, gave them. But yeah, it's like Spain are like a solid, it's a bit like Italy. They haven't got the, you know, the Baggios and the...
They don't have the heavy hitters that they have had in previous years, but...
They don't have the marquee names, but they're more of like team, you know, they're more team teams, so to speak.
Yeah.
But I think England's resilient setup plays into that, that they can take these types of teams head on.
And I think, as I said earlier, the depth of our firepower, if needed, will scare teams. We haven't seen much of it yet, but teams will know that, okay, well, they've got Rashford, they've got Sancho, they've got pace to burn if they need to. You've got Foden, you've got, you know, you've even got like Chilwell, a Champions League winner, left back, who hasn't kicked a ball yet, has he?
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's what we've been talking about in terms of it being a match day squad routine, because we've got firepower that we can keep replenishing
and
through in game, and you have five subs, which plays into it nicely. So hopefully that'll be a factor. But yeah, it's just about game management for Southgate and how he utilizes players, and you know, people not getting too upset if your man Grealish isn't starting. That doesn't necessarily mean anything. I mean, you know, again, Platt didn't start until the quarterfinals, and he's synonymous with the 1990 World Cup, you know, scoring that massive goal against Belgium in the injury time last seconds, and then started against Cameroon, scored in the third and fourth playoff. And, you know, I put out a tweet today, 1966, when England won the World Cup. England won their group with two wins and a draw. England didn't concede a single goal in the group stage in the first knockout game. Ramsey was getting shit for his selections, especially in terms of Hurst, you know, Jimmy Greaves. England beat Germany in that tournament, semi-final and final at Wembley. And the hero that emerged in the latter rounds, because he didn't really feature in the group, or he didn't start the group stages, Mr. Jeff Hurst, played in claret and blue club colours. So all the omens are there.
It's certainly a big opportunity. It's one of those things where the stars are just aligning a little bit with the draw and the performances. We're just starting to rev up a little bit.
Yeah, these are the things that you wouldn't normally say out loud, but since we have a podcast and we've got to say some things, you have to say them out loud.
Yeah, well, it has to come. It has to come home eventually, doesn't it?
Just to stop that song. Somebody's there's the Aston Villa kit was leaked out from a website. It seems to be a legit. I mean, these things
they're reasonably reliable on that website. Actually, they've got it right on quite a few occasions.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you got your labels on there, et cetera, and you know, it looks like a model job. As somebody's just replied, barcode wankers. Somebody else put barcode, because I just put up the tweet and said it reminds me of something, and it's the West Brom kit, isn't it?
I mean, I don't buy Village kits anyway, but it doesn't really affect me. But I definitely wouldn't be buying the home kit.
Somebody else has said, Kepa won't stop till the Villa badge is on your shoulder. It does creep up very high, doesn't
it? Who had that? I think it was Middlesbrough, wasn't it, the year they went down? I'm sure I remember they had the club emblem on the shoulder. It was a bizarre kit. That was the year they won the Coca-Cola Cup, as was.
Favourite international kit in the Euros?
To be fair to them, the German away kit that they lost to England in was superb. So that's my favourite kit.
I like it. It's a great kit.
The away one?
Yeah, the German away kit's brilliant, yeah.
I think the home one's pretty funky as well, with the little black pinstripes and, you know, the flag kind of cuffs. I think home and away, they have the best combo. So what did you say, Phil?
No, I like the Italian one. It's just a nice blue.
It's good, but I just think by Italian standards, it's not one of their better ones. I remember, like, you know, the Kappa kits of the early 2000s, they were brilliant.
What, when they had the badge on the shoulder?
Yeah.
Back when Kappa was a bit stretchier.
Yeah. It's the skin tight kits. They were great kits though, those ones. Except Wales had one as well, which kind of ruined it a bit. But yeah, I think Germany away one for me. What's your favourite, David?
I would go probably German home one. It looked like a kit that wasn't going to win the tournament. That's why I liked it so much. It wasn't fearsome. It was just too fancy and nice. And I thought they're not winning the tournament in that, which is a good news.
I'll take that.
Mbappe, Mr. Superstar, absolutely
fluffed it.
Fluffed his team's lines. Well, fluffed his lines. Cost his team
And then I saw all the French parents were all arguing after the game, weren't they, apparently, as well?
Well, they the French, if they're not arguing before the tournament, they're arguing during the tournament or after the tournament.
It wouldn't be a tournament if it didn't have the French kicking off or somebody going home in a huff.
Yeah, and when they have a monk on, it's like, I mean, it's we saw it in South Africa, it can just disintegrate the whole team. Doesn't matter how good they are.
Yeah.
But that's a good thing about the England squad at this moment is there seems to be a good spirit there and a belief and pretty, you know, it's quite level-headed at the moment.
Seems that way. I mean, the thing that the one takeaway I had from that French game was Mbappe misses the penalty, walks off the field, and barely any of his teammates come to console him. They would just sort of just fuck him off. It suggests not a great team spirit. Or they just don't like him. I don't know. I don't know which.
Or he's a prick.
Maybe. It's one or other or both, isn't it?
Who knows? Who cares? England go through. Villa are relevant.
Again.
Because the superstar DJ, I was going to say, the superstar Salvation, who only needs to touch the ball 7 times and you're going to get at least 2 goals out of that. He's an influencer.
Hashtag influencer.
Yeah, Euro 2020. Hashtag influencer. We wish him well in the next game, which you'll be able to quote Phil Shaw, is literally a buy.
It's a gimme, according to Phil.
According to the neutral, I mean, this isn't like England rose-tinted spectacles. This is a certified neutral saying it's as good as a buy. So we'll take his word for that one. His Twitter address is in the notes. The Ukraine thumpers 4-0. Or Shevchenko comes out of retirement to play in that game. Right, until then, thank you very much, Mr. Shaw and Mr. Budd, for joining me. Thank you very much for listening as well. Shout out to Mr. Harrison. How's it? Hope you are well and hope you get out of hospital and everything's okay. And you get to enjoy England march into the semi-finals. On that note, it's goodbye from me and it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.